Hey everybody, I'm Bobby Salveson.
And I'm Michael Monaco, and together we are the Hazmat Guys, connecting the Hazmat community near and far with knowledge, insight, and real-world examples in an effort to make your job just a little bit easier and safer.
Now, let's take a minute to hear from today's sponsors. Hey, Mike, pop quiz. What is the standard go-to method for emergency decon?
That's pretty easy. Wet decon, right?
Well, you know, you're not the only one that may be thinking that, but it's actually dry decon.
No. How many times have I heard dilution is the solution to pollution?
Actually, too many. And that's the issue. Makes sense if you think about it. Without the use of water, we don't need to spend extra time setting up traditional showers or pools, and there's no wastewater afterwards. And you're not going to freeze anybody to death if it's below 60 degrees.
Check out firstlinetech.com/drydecon. Firstline Technology has a whole webpage dedicated to the methodology and links to plenty of dry decon resources. See for yourself why dry decon with FiberTech should be your go-to immediate decon solution.
With many major cities having nearby waterways, subways, and sewers, first responders sometimes face rescue situations where they must wade into stagnant water. Turnout and traditional rescue gear is not designed to provide protection from hazards and chemicals while submerged in stagnant water. Lion prides itself on making garments to keep first responders safe and is now offering a protection solution for these stagnant water situations. The lightweight one-piece FRS, which is flood response suit, protects against lower levels of liquid concentrations that may be encountered in flood zones or stagnant water where wading is required. The FRS is a non-certified hoodless garment with a special AquaSeal zipper, butyl wrist gloves, and neoprene collar to keep the hazards out. The FRS is made from Kempak, selectively permeable fabric by Gore-Tex Labs, which provides protection from toxic industrial chemicals and blood-borne pathogens while managing heat and body stress for longer mission times. When it comes to ChemBio solutions, Lion has your back. Let's get to the show.
Your backup team could be in structural firefighting gear, because what's your entry team in?
Structural firefighting gear.
Because the hazard is flammability and plastic melts.
Yeah.
Bobby and I talked a couple months ago about, well, what if it was ammonia? It's flammable and toxic. You know, now I'm not as comfortable because OSHA, I don't think, would allow it. But NFPA still gives the incident commander that leeway, freedom, whatever you want to call it. So maybe there's a good reason. And then you have to just look at that and say, well, it depends. That's for you, Bob.
Well, they're going to have to, like you said, the big part of that is, yeah, the incident commander, you know, the hazmat techs, the hazmat specs, they go, hey, we want to change the PPE. He's got to sign off on it and then document it, which that's where like the rubber hits the road. And that's where most incident commanders be like, well, if the nerds are saying, yeah, we're doing this, okay, fine. But now it's like, okay, sign your Herbie Hancock down here and sign off on this thing. And that's when they go, well, wait, I'm putting my name down in this. And I think everybody here understands, like, we're all kind of senior dudes here, is that, you know, the old adage of, you know, even if I screw up, my department will come to my aid. They will send their lawyers. They'll come. They'll back me up. Not today. They will sell you down the river.
In your world.
Yeah, they will throw you under the bus, like you'll be just driving over bodies. That's all they do.
It's the body
just
bus,
like a body bridge.
Well, what's the bottom line for everybody? You know, the member safety, right? That's what we're all trying to achieve. And I think that's where we've talked for the last couple of years about if I'm in a suit in a level A 1991 garment and I have some type of a reason that I go down, time is my enemy. So yep. Do you want the average to be 6 minutes, 39 seconds to get to the hot zone, which means Daryl's getting there in 4 minutes, but Jeff's getting there in 8 minutes. And with my luck, I'll be the 10-minute guy. So I think what Daryl was saying before was the faster we get to you and package you, the faster we can get you out and remedy your issue. So when we go and we talk to some people, and they'll know exactly who I'm talking about, and they say, you know, we're 50% dressed back at the decon demarcation line, and then they go through the timeline, and you can see the light bulb go on, and they go, maybe we'll go back and talk about this one again. Because nobody yet has given me a good reason not to be on air in close proximity to the person that I'm supposed to be responsible for getting out of there as fast as possible.
No, it 100% makes sense when you put it like that. What about is one of the things that we kind of talk about, but we still see, believe it or not, you're going to laugh when I know all four of you are going to laugh when I say this. But yet it is still something that people, they're attached to and they hold, the idea and concept that if you're in a level A and you go down, your partner goes down, that you should turn tail and run because that chemical got through the suit and it's coming at you.
Oh, we've heard that one.
have you guys ever come across, and I got to tell you, I hear this not more often than not. I hear it enough to be like, where did this come from? And I can tell you that when I was first as a technician, that was taught to me.
Wow. Oh, my God.
We were taught the buddy system.
What is it? It was in Backdrive, right? Was it you go, right? It was like, good luck.
Yeah. No, and I can so clearly remember sitting in my technician class going, that doesn't make any sense at all. Like the probability of having a medical issue versus like the chemical got higher in there. I'm like, this doesn't make any sense. But that was, my instructors were adamant that if your partner goes down and you're in a level A, that means it's gotten through the suit. And I still hear it when I teach sometimes.
So you abandon your partner?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's yes.
That was taught.
Yes.
But okay. It wasn't just like one instructor. It was the motto. It was like the whole thing.
So in our world, we would tell the unaffected entry team member to do whatever they could. You know, maybe they could drag him 20 feet. Maybe they can't. But they're supposed to communicate exactly what they call the Mayday, communicate what they need, and assist the, let's say, two backup team members, depending on that depends, because you could have a more serious situation where you wanted to bump up your backup team, but at least two members, and help package him. Now, I'm not counting on him to drag him out or carrying him out, but he's not leaving that person because that he has to communicate. You may not know exactly where that person is. Jeff, Darryl, am I off?
Well, I think the thing is that if I were in that situation, I would, because this is what we've always taught, is that your chance of having a medical emergency, kind of like Mike said, in a suit is way greater than it is that you're going to be attacked by something. So that's probably what I would think, that this guy is having some sort of medical emergency, maybe a stroke, heart attack, something of that nature. I would not be thinking he's being attacked by the chemical, because we took our time to get dressed. We had layers of people, you know, do it. And that's just basic stuff we do in technician class. And again, what we've taught is that there's a more like chance of being in that horrible environment that you can be in. And he just had a medical emergency, and we're going to get on him. We're going to drag him out. And that's the other thing. The other argument for having the backup team there is if he goes down, well, if he's standing up and he just keels over, backup team's going in, they're going, something went down. It's our game time. And the three of them immediately attack that guy to remove him from the situation. And really, I think we all agree, even in our best bunker gear, if we suit up really well, it's a good protection against nearly all chemicals that we deal with the exception of, we're talking, you know, really exotic stuff, extremely exotic.
Yeah, they're outliers.
Yeah, so we're not spending time there. We're not sitting in there, you know, smoking a cigarette, you know, waiting for, we're in there for a very minimal time, and three people can drag somebody out to a safety position very quickly, and then move from there. So, Darryl, do you, because that's what you've seen when you've been teaching this, and you're...
I'm going to follow up on your the world's coming to an end because every chemical is going to run through every chemical suit type of comment you said, Mike.
Right.
The what I get story, and you'll love this, Bobby. What if, and then they continue on, what if you now increased your backup team? Now there's four people in there versus just two people, and the whole thing collapses or explodes or does whatever. And now you got four people you got to go and rescue. So they what if this huge story, and I look at them and I go, if that happens, your research team failed you.
Yes.
You did not do the correct information research to provide the team. Now, to follow up with that, if you research and you find that your mitigation profile is going to be pretty intense and you need more people, then increase your entry team. So if you think the average is 2 and 2, but you think, oh, at this point, I need to increase it, well, then put another person on your entry team. If you got to put on a C kit, then put four people on it. Because you got to go downstream, you got to do different things, you got up and down, whatever it is. But don't what if it to the fact that you're going to explode things or the chemicals going to impede everybody and damage everybody. And that's where we were getting in trouble with, is people were making up these stories. But really, it came down to taking a look at and continue what kind of what Rick said is your backup team's right there. And one of the other kind of disagreements we got were, well, they're on air, so they're eating up all their air. But really, the mitigation team, the entry team, is in there working. As a backup team, you're just standing in sight. If you're working, you're doing something wrong. You should be skip breathing. You should be relaxing. Matter of fact, you should kind of be kind of stair step that one person's close that could see them, and the other guys are standing back. And if you visualize something, you turn around, you wave them in. You're not even exposed at that same point now.
That goes just like, you know, people say, well, what do you, you know, what if you have to jump off the rig in a level A or, you know, a level B? I'm like, then you're literally parked in the wrong spot.
You're in the wrong spot, dude.
Like we go, this is like day one stuff, like park uphill, upwind, upstream, upstate. I'm like, if you have to get off the rig in any type of specialty equipment, you are parked wrong.
Hey, listeners, the Hazmat Guys have some great news for you and your organization. We are really stepping up our brand of in-person training in addition to the great content you get on demand. Now, we know what you're thinking, but this is already incredibly great stuff, and how could it possibly get better? All I can say is, wait until we're in front of you. When we gather the best of the best from across this planet and even beyond, and assemble an instructional cadre that is seriously second to none. And now we have a ton of ways to help you, your team, or your organization get to a level that makes everybody proud. From subscriptions, on-demand, hybrid methods to full in-person goodness. You can contact me, Bob, at thehazmatguys.com to schedule a call and find a solution that works for you. And every participant of an in-person class gets a free one-year premium subscription, which sounds pretty good. So contact me at Bob at thehazmatguys.com and get some more information.
So yes. Piggyback on what Daryl just said, people use the excuse of, well, if I up the number on my entry team, I don't have enough people. So say your example, you're putting on a C kit and you go, I'm going to send three or four guys on the entry team. They think you have to have three or four guys on the backup team. And you don't. You have to have at least two.
I was just going to ask that.
Say in NFPA or OSHA, that if you have a four-person entry team, you have to have a four-person backup team. If you think about that, four-person entry team and somebody slips and falls, you got more help. You know, now you got three uninjured and a two-person backup team. So you don't have to worry about, well, if I go four, I got to go eight. If I go, you know, three, I got to go six. You can do it with not too many people. And having said that, I think what we've found over the last 3, 4, or 5 years is there's a lot of hazmat teams, quote unquote, that really aren't hazmat teams because they can't field enough technicians to cover all the positions that need to be covered. And so when somebody in our survey sent me back and said, well, I don't think I'd be able to do this because I only have three technicians. And I called them and said, well, so how long does it take you to get more? And they said, that's it. That's all I get. And my answer is, but then you don't have a hazmat team because you don't even have the buddy system covered yet, let alone decon research, safety officer, all the other stuff. So, and Don Abbott told us this too. He said, there's a lot of teams out there that aren't really teams and shouldn't be responding on these things. Maybe they need to have a more regional concept instead of saying every department in my county has to have, you know, a team.
Yeah, the regional aspect, that the places that have regional teams have very good coverage. And I think it's those people that are starting to look at the mission specific going, hey, I wonder if we can work this in somehow because I don't have the manpower that I need.
Mission specific can never take the place of technicians. That's right. Not the intent.
All right, very cool. Well, all right. So,
real quick thing, Mike.
Yes, go.
You brought this up, and it made me
angry. I do that sometimes.
No. The guy that says, well, I have a two-person entry team, and one of those guys goes down. I launch my backup team from the decon area, and they get in there, and their job is to cut a hole in the side of his suit and then air transfer for him and all this. And we listen to this in classes and you go, dude, by the time you get the hole cut and get ready to air transfer, we've dragged that guy's sorry body out to emergency decon and we're done.
Yeah.
But I heard it again the other day. They said, you know, well, that's how we do it. And I don't get that. Doesn't make sense.
No, we will drop, like if you come out and you're too... that refuge area, whatever you, the contaminant is down to a level that I'm comfortable with. I slice the suit and pull you out. It's like, I just pulled like a moth came out of this chrysalis. Like it, cause the faster I can get CPR and oxygen and washing and everything of you is your trajectory gets that much better. Futzing around with that suit. Like it's not a technical rescue. I still see guys going into suits with knives. Like if I have to, I'll cut myself out. I'm like, there's a zipper right here.
Right.
Just grab it and open it.
And I think,
reason you got the suit on. There's a reason you have that suit on. So if you get panicky and you cut yourself out, now you just exposed yourself. And that was one of the biggest concerns about having the rescue team. And just a little history, if you want.
Yes,
about
absolutely.
The rescue team. So we didn't have a rescue team when Jeff and I started this whole thing. It was the entry team and the backup team. And what we saw is as soon as somebody went down, everybody's respirations escalated. One of their persons were down. They wanted to take care of them. And depending on the entry, you know, were they on the 11th minute, you know, the work cycle? So where was their air? So we were seeing secondary maydays while the non- Mayday individuals were standing in the decon line because they were running out of air. So what we realized is all that work process, they were fumbling around because the lack of mobility, the dexterity, the visibility. So that's when somebody came up with the idea of standing up a rescue team in a non-encapsulated type of garment. And it could be all the way down to turnouts if the chemical, you know, allowed it. And now you have your physical abilities and you can get that person out of the suit. And as you're doing it, it's two lanes. Now you have your entry team and your backup team that are lined up in the standard decon line. They're going through as they would on a normal basis. There's no more secondary maydays. This rescue individual that for whatever reason, be it they fell down a broken arm or they had a seizure, whatever it is, they are decon and out of that suit immediately. And getting transferred over to medical.
So not only is your rescue team a rescue team, they are completely separate and independent from the technical decon team.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we tried it. Daryl set it up and said, hey guys, go ahead and do it. And when they took the injured person through the technical decon line, which is made for people who are what? Ambulatory. It became a complete garage sale. It was almost unusable after they went through it. So in other words, what happened is they're trying to take a guy that's supine through a technical decon that's made for people to walk, and it became destroyed. And then you had three other guys that are sitting outside going, hey, you know, what about us? They're like, okay, let's set the showers back up. Let's do it, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it just, so we set it off to the side. And while that's going on, the other ones are getting deconned. It's a, you know, it's a dual decon thing going on because you still got guys that are, that need it.
Mm. So really two decon setups are required, an emergency decon as well as your technical decon.
Right. And when it comes to that emergency decon, it's not like you have a three pool Grand Poopah decon setup. You got a simple water area, and you got to realize if the person is laying on their back, you're only having to decon half of them and cut them out of half the suit because you're kind of filleting the suit out and getting them out of the suit. Now, is it 100%? No, but what's the difficulty that this person's having at this moment? You know, right. You want them out of the suit.
And remember that you don't have to mandatory have technical decon for your team members and emergency decon. That's only when you opt to have the rescue team. The rescue team's not mandatory. It says in the standard that it's at the option of the incident commander based on, you know, the severity of the incident, the chemical, lots of different factors, but it needs to be considered, I think is the way we worded it, on all incidents, but should be stood up on level A, you're going in, you're going above ground, below ground, whatever it might be, grade. But that's still up to the incident commander. So if you say, hey, my team's got 12 technicians, there's no way I can do this. Okay. You know, your stricken member probably won't be handled as quickly as if you had it, but Don Abbott gave me a great example after all this was said and done. One of the fire departments that has a college in their town had an emergency lab issue on the third floor, and they have to recall because they don't have enough people. So every hazmat call, they got to recall. And he said they recall, and the battalion chief comes up to him and says, hey, you know, why do we have all these guys here? Can't we get some of them off the clock? You know, I'm worried about money. And he says, it's true. He says, well, we need to have a rescue team. And so he kept the two extra guys and said, I got to have a rescue team. Wouldn't you know it, there's a mayday. And he said, it went like freaking clockwork. Those guys were out so fast, decon and off to medical. And he told Don Abbott, we will always have a rescue team from here on in. It just worked so well. And what's the guy's life worth? You know, is it worth the two extra overtimes? Is it worth, well, this was our Florida buddy. Is it worth how much you pay for that extra two bottles of air for your backup team to be on air in close proximity?
Right.
Remember right. that guy?
Well, I could tell you yeah. what mine are worth, and it really depends on if I owe them mutuals or not.
I'll tell you what, Rick, you just coined it. That is the title of the show. What's the guy's life worth?
What's your life worth?
That's a great
here from Tom Seymour. And he put and he sent me pages and pages of handwritten stuff here. And it says, quote, backup team is not the RIT team for hazmat entry team. The on-site incident commander needs to make up its entry team to perform the assigned tasks to get the work done. And this may require multiple shifts before all the needed work can be accomplished inside the hot zone before the hazmat event can be brought to a successful conclusion. So this 30-year-old premise of two people, maybe you do need to have more on your entry team and perhaps your backup team. But I think the confusion lies of people think the rescue team is the one that's doing the removal. And we've already brought it up. We're in revision cycle right now. We brought it up to say, you know, Daryl, Jeff, and I talked this over a lot before this became into 472, this edition of 472. And we said, what else can we call it? We couldn't come up with anything better. So maybe we come up with a more descriptive name. I don't know. One of the things we already have in the change is under our definitions in Chapter 3 for backup team, we're going to change one word. Instead of it saying a minimum of two responders, it will say a minimum of two technicians. So hopefully that clarifies that. Because when you get into Chapter 10 and you read it, hopefully everybody goes to Chapter 10 and reads it, it's real clear. But what I'm kind of thinking is maybe they're just reading the definition and they don't go further than that. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
I can't imagine anybody just stopping at the title.
Or they were told this through a third party.
Yes, because I find a lot of people that I deal with and talk to have never even opened up.
Yeah, they're like, I heard this, or I heard a guy told me that. And it's like, they open it.
They think the standard is some like sacred, you know, document that only like, you know, the chosen ones can open and interpret. And I know that sounds ridiculous and funny, but it's 100% the truth, you know, I encourage everybody to, you can read any of the NFPA documents online for free, you know, click in, sign in, read it, learn it, understand it. It's, as Bob says, it's the rule book, right? If you want to bend the rules, you got to know what the rules are that you're bending.
And it's not an expensive document. When a couple years back, when they told us they were going to do these consolidations, some people thought, well, they, you know, NFPA, they want to get more money, and they didn't. They took 472, 473, and 1072 and put it into quote unquote 470. And the only thing the 470 designates is those three standards are together. The standards are still there. They're just in one volume. And I think it's what, $96 for the three of them? That's not real expensive for a team to invest in. I'd put a shameless plug in that I think 475, which is a recommended practice for hazmat team program management, is also a really good resource, and that's cheap. But I think you gotta read it to understand the rules. You know, it's your playbook. And so how do you know you're not doing it right, or you are doing it right, if you don't read it? The last thing I would tell you on that is, if you go into the annex on backup team, we really put a lot in there, and that was the NFPA editors. So when I came up with the definition for a backup team, it was several paragraphs, and they said, we can't do that. You know, you get one or two sentences for your definition in NFPA, which, you know, boil that down, right?
Right.
And then they said, but you can put stuff in the annexed.
Hey, guys, I know you're thinking, what just happened? And the problem is that for the last 2 to 3 minutes of the show, my computer completely crashed and we lost the last 2 to 3 minutes. But don't fret. It was just us saying goodbye to each other. And there was really no content after that. So my apologies, but keep coming back. And we really enjoyed this episode with these guys. So we'll see you guys out there.
Well, that wraps up another episode of the Hazmat Guys. You can find us at Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel. And don't be afraid to use that like or follow button. Or
you can sign up for even more content from us at thehazmatguys.com. Here, you can subscribe so that we can connect you to even more great stuff. Your support is going to help us improve and build this awesome community even more.
Yeah, and if you want to get to the next level, you won't want to miss our premium content. Our specialist level provides you with access to our entire catalog of shows, which is now over 300, an exclusive Facebook group, premium video with no ads, and so much more. Also, check the Hazmat Guys University link on our website.
And don't forget, we are always interested in hearing about incidences or calls that you have experienced. We may bring you on the show to share that story. Reach us at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
And remember, folks, don't just get on the job, get into the job.